Join the conversation on Cape Talk.
In health and wellness today, we want to take a look at the issue of vaping, especially as it applies to teenagers. I know from previous segments, and I want to say this up front, I know from previous conversations about vaping that we do have listeners who have always messaged in saying, it really helped me. I tried everything in trying to quit smoking. Nothing worked until e-cigarettes came along, and they were the thing that helped me get off cigarettes and stay off them for good. And I want to acknowledge that up front. That is, of course, to be welcomed. But saying that something is better than smoking is not exactly a high bar of comparison, is it? And particularly as research tells us more about the side effects of vaping itself, we become more and more concerned, particularly about those who aren't meant to be vaping, but are doing so. And I'm talking here specifically about our teens, the adolescents. And if you are a parent who has grappled with this, who has discovered that your own teenager was vaping quietly, or that it is happening in their circle of friends, that you're having conversations with them about trying to stop it, you are very welcome to join the conversation. You're welcome to do so anonymously. We understand nobody wants to throw their own children under the bus here, but 0725671567 is where you send a voice note if you'd like to do that, or you can call us on 0214460567. It's my great pleasure to welcome on the line Professor Richard van Zylsmet, who is Professor of Pulmonology at Groote Schuur Hospital, a principal investigator at the renowned UCT Lung Institute, and somebody who knows his way around the human lungs far better than the rest of us do. Richard, great to have you on the show.
Pippa, lovely to be back on the show. Sorry I couldn't be in the studio, but delighted to be with you talking about something other than COVID.
Absolutely. Likewise. Likewise. In broad terms, maybe we need to start, Richard, by saying, what is the difference in the experience of smoking a tobacco cigarette versus the experience of smoking an electronic one in terms of what the body is being exposed to?
Okay, Pippa, can I reverse up even one step further?
Sure.
And just comment on your initial introduction. And I think if we're going to be talking and discussing in relation to adolescents, we need to park all the adult stuff, as you indicated. The safer than, help me quit. None of that applies when we are discussing adolescents. It's a different ballgame.
Yeah.
And so the controversies about whether we should or shouldn't and all of that, we need to deal with those and dispense with that. And if we're going to focus on the adolescents, the challenges are very different. And now to come back to answer your question, we just don't know what happens to a 13-year-old who starts vaping. Are they going to end up like a 13-year-old who starts smoking in 20 years with emphysema or something? Or not. We just don't know what's going to happen in the long term.
That is the sobering thing, is not enough time has passed to allow anything near a comprehensive body of long-term research to build up. From what we've seen, though, Richard, I mean, there are indications that vaping itself has side effects. They might not be the same or as severe as the side effects of smoking a tobacco cigarette, but it would certainly appear that they're there.
Absolutely. And I think one thing we need to also recognize when we talk about adolescence is that your lungs, bizarrely, people don't necessarily realize this, that your lungs continue to grow until you hit about age 25 to 30.
Okay.
So your lung volume expands until that age. And then once you hit sort of 30-ish, your lung volume actually reduces per year on year. That's normal with aging. And one of the big concerns and what we see, and we've seen it locally in South Africa, we have many patients of mine started smoking at 8, 9 or 10, little stompies from friends. If you start exposing a growing lung to things like tobacco smoke or electronic cigarettes and nicotine, the potential in the growing adolescent lung for damage is significantly higher than if you are 20 or 25. So it's not only that they may be dangerous, it's that you're starting to expose yourself at an age where your lungs are still growing and potentially can stunt your long-term lung growth.
Wow. Most of them do contain at least some nicotine, and we know they don't have all the chemicals that are present in a regular cigarette, but some of them are there, and nicotine is in most of them. Richard, is nicotine in itself harmful to the adolescent, to their lungs or to their brain, perhaps? We know it's addictive, certainly, but it is it itself a dangerous compound?
So the short answer is yes, and the long answer is yes, but let me expand on it. Mm-hmm. I think, so I've spoken at now probably two or three high schools, been invited to talk about the risks of vaping to high schoolers. And one thing that I've recognized in this particular group is that the nicotine addiction side of things is a concern. I'll come back to that in a moment. We know that nicotine is, as best as we know, not a cancer-causing drug. But when you are 12 or 15, I mean, we're not really worried about long-term lung cancer. But nicotine can impact on your ability to defend against infections. So simple things like viral infections, pneumonia. We know that nicotine can also reprogram your brain. The term is neurobiological plasticity. The reason your kids learn so much faster than you do is that their brains are laying down pathways, as that's how you learn stuff. And adolescents have a very good ability to lay down memory, and nicotine weirdly interferes with that. Now, it's a little bit outside of the lungs, so I'm outside of my comfort zone when it comes to neurobiology. But there's data from some animal models, there's data from some studies to show that adolescents who are exposed to nicotine can have significant long-term issues with ability to remember things, to learn. There are even some studies talking about depression. So exposing your brain as an adolescent to a chemical that has neurological impacts is not a great option at the best of times.
Okay.
But to complete that, I have seen and heard of many adolescents saying they are vaping as a way of coping. And that's the other area that concerns me. So whether it's good for your lungs or not is a separate issue. Yep. But with the stress and pressure that many of our adolescents are under, quite a few of the high schoolers that I've spoken to have sort of come up to me afterwards to say, look, we're vaping because it's helping coping with the stress and pressure. And we know that nicotine does that. That's why people start smoking, is because of that pleasurable effect. So I think there's another element underlying this sort of vaping pandemic that we're seeing amongst high schoolers, is not only, well, it's safer than tobacco, so let me try and experiment. There's actually a sort of biological need for mental support, which they seem to be getting from vaping.
Richard, which then speaks to one of the big concerns we often hear touted when it comes to talking about teens and vaping, that this is potentially a gateway into other more destructive behaviour, that it might start with a vape and lead them on to other coping mechanisms. And that comment of turning to the vape as a way of coping is a habit of seeking an outside influence to help you cope rather than trying to do the work internally to find ways of coping with it. Are you worried about that aspect of this being a possible stepping stone to other either to cigarettes themselves or perhaps into drugs and alcohol?
So it's an exceedingly controversial topic. The vaping guys will be all over me if I start talking about gateway. The challenge with gateway is that we don't know what you would have done if you didn't vape. So if you started vaping as opposed to started smoking, would you have started smoking or not? So that's a question we never know the answer to. Yeah. What we do know is that a large proportion of people who start vaping start smoking afterwards. So the fact that you start vaping doesn't mean you've avoided smoking cigarettes. It just means you started vaping. So there are those that were going to smoke anyway that will ultimately smoke. But if you had to ask me, is there good evidence that out of 100 teenagers, they had no other reasons and we all started them to vape as an experiment, would they all end up on hard drugs? I don't think there's any evidence for that. Mm-hmm. But you are absolutely correct that the help-seeking behavior or the chemical need that vaping is providing may be speaking to a significant other problem, that they were ultimately going to take drugs anyway if someone didn't intervene. But it's a very controversial space. But yes, it is of concern. But that would be the least of my worries as to my son's vaping, or he may end up on drugs. My son's vaping. Why is he vaping? Yeah. What can I do to help him get off that? What coping mechanisms does he need for life? Because this is sending me a signal Not a guaranteed path he's going to end up on hard drugs.
Yeah, fair enough. Just for those who've joined us late to the conversation, we're talking to Professor Richard Van Zyl Smit, who is a leading pulmonologist, a professor of pulmonology, somebody who's a principal investigator at the renowned UCT Lung Institute, and talking about specifically vaping and teenagers. It's a difficult one to encourage listeners to join in, Richard, because I'm aware that parents are probably maybe embarrassed to talk about the fact that their child has been found vaping, or maybe don't want to embarrass the child by making that link. I'm quite encouraged by the fact that you say some of the high school students are coming up to you after their talks to have the conversation with you and say, I am vaping, and this is why. That is quite encouraging. What is the advice for parents who think it might be happening, or know, you know, maybe their child has been caught vaping at school with friends and sent home with detention, or worse? What's your advice on how to address it with them?
So I think there are two elements that I've sort of come across. One is that parents are quite happy that their kids are vaping because they're not smoking tobacco, and so, well, that's a good thing. And I've heard several stories of parents sort of not necessarily encouraging vaping, but being quite comfortable with the fact that their kids are vaping because they're not smoking. So I think there's an issue that needs to be dealt with there. But I think, like with all of these things, adolescents are going to do what they're going to do. And my approach to when I've spoken to the high school kids is to say, look, this is the information. You need to make up that decision. And, you know, if a parent shout and scream and say, you may not, you won't, well, they're clearly going to do it. And so I think an open, honest conversation with your kids as to what's going on. Is it because you're stressed? Is it because it's helping you cope? And I really am concerned. Having chatted to quite a few kids from various, okay, I mean, he's a fairly affluent southern suburbs high school that I was speaking at. But just saying that their friends vape just because they need to cope with all the stress and pressure. And yeah. I would use it as a signal that something needs to be discussed rather than an opportunity for judgment or punishment.
Yeah. Somebody asking an important question here, which we hadn't got to yet, but let's go there. Saying, can you please talk about the issue of what's in the flavorants in the vape juice? Richard, this is something that particularly I know gets raised when we talk about the sort of marketing to teenagers, which none of the manufacturers want to concede is actually happening. But still, there are sweetly flavored versions. There are bubblegum flavored versions. There are caramel scented ones that would appear certainly to be aimed at appealing to a particular market. Let's leave it there. Those flavorants themselves are often full of all kinds of nasties, aren't they?
So the flavorants are very interesting. Yes, you are absolutely right. I mean, why do you want bubblegum flavored vape juice except to attract people who like the flavor of bubblegum? I mean, there's no other reason for it. Most of the flavorants are normal food flavorants that you would eat and are safe for eating. But many of them, cinnamon is one, vanilla is another, that have been shown that when you heat them to several hundred degrees and then inhale them, have significantly changed properties that have significant damage or potential to cause damage to the body. So cinnamon is an interesting one. It damages the little cilia in your lungs that help clear mucus, slows down how fast they work. And that's a very common flavorant, and there's good data showing that particular flavorant is a problem. Vanilla has some other issues with it, and there are a variety of different flavorants that have in and of themselves toxicity. Mm. There is a strong push, and particularly in the U.S., to try and ban flavors so that it will again reduce the appeal. But absolutely, the reason that you have Red Bull flavor or bacon flavor or vanilla or pina colada or whatever you can think of, there are thousands of flavors, is purely to attract someone to do it.
Another point, you spoke there about efforts in international markets to try and push away or ban those flavorants. That speaks then to the issue of regulation and legislation, which we mustn't leave out of this conversation, Prof. We have a new tobacco products control bill, which is seeking to clamp down on electronic cigarettes for the first time, in addition to the old-fashioned kind. In terms of what's in that legislation, are you happy that it's doing enough to better control the sale of these products, particularly given that we're talking about teenagers are not meant to be using them?
Absolutely. I mean, essentially, the new tobacco bill, which should have been passed now probably 3 years ago, so it's got stuck, essentially will regulate electronic cigarettes in exactly the same way that they'll regulate tobacco, which I think is entirely appropriate. Not for sale for under 18s, limited advertising. And yes, if you're an adult and you wish to use them, you want to help try and help yourself to get off cigarettes, stop smoking, that's of value to adults. You can make that decision. I think most electronic cigarette manufacturers would be quite happy with stronger legislation in terms of adolescents, and they would agree with it, but it's part of a package deal. But again, you know, adolescents can get hold of beer and cigarettes and drugs and what have you. So it's not going to prevent it, but I certainly think the reduction in accessibility is one part of the control of illicit substances. It's one part of the process in addition to education, support, treatment. It's not going to be the be-all and end-all, but it's an important part to limit accessibility to adolescents.
Prof, I'm going to ask you to stay with us, and I just want to bring in a caller who's phoned in. It's another doctor on the line from Rondebosch, Dr. Colin de la Harp. Good afternoon. You'd like to comment on the subject. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, just in terms of teenagers and their exposure to these things, obviously the more they're exposed, the worse it could be. And it was just an interesting anecdote that the other day I had a patient coming in and asking me to please do his heavy metals in his blood. And we tested him for lead, nickel, and cadmium. Yeah. And we found that his nickel level was 3 times higher than what it should have been. And when reading it up in terms of the vaping, the coils that are made, that heat up to heat the vape, are made of these heavy metals, and they are exposed to very high temperatures, at which point they start to vaporize, and then obviously are breathed in by the person doing the vaping.
Sure.
And so these things appear not to be without significant risk. And I think that we're very, very sort of unaware of the risks at the moment. But as time is going on, we're seeing that risks might be completely different to that of smoking. But they certainly do cover considerate risks. And one should be protecting your teenagers against it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Colin de la Harp, for that comment. Professor Richard Funsell-Smit, I'll bring it back to you for the final 30 seconds or so. Colin raising another point here about another element of the device, which you don't even think about when you're talking about adult users, but we have to think about as parents trying to protect our teens.
Absolutely. And I mean, I said it to the teenagers when I was talking to them. You could argue with me to say that everybody who breathes fresh air is going to ultimately die, which is true. But you really should only be breathing fresh air. Vaping, smoking, cannabis, you name it. Inhaling smoke of any form, vape, what have you, is not great at the best of times. Adolescents have a unique, particular vulnerability to nicotine addiction if exposed to nicotine. And I think as parents and regulators and people, we need to be aware of the risks. And I think we also need to be aware that this mustn't be a pejorative judgmental space, that if we see adolescents vaping, a significant proportion of them, not all of them, but a significant proportion of them may be using it as a way to cope with significant stress at school, exams and what have you. And it should be an opportunity to intervene in addition to obviously regulating and reducing access and promoting fresh air.
Professor, thank you so much for the work you're doing to raise awareness of all of those points. Really appreciate your input this afternoon. Professor Richard Funsell-Smit, Professor of Pulmonology and a Principal Investigator at the renowned UCT Lung Institute. Please do feel free to look for the podcast of that interview to share with your own teenagers or with perhaps their schools if you feel it relevant.